I can't give you information about pre-memory me. I can give you information that's true. And I can give you information about the crossing, for which I have made a couple of paintings called Precious. And that's kind of when my memory wakes up. But the rest of it, of course, I can pass on because it was told to me, and it would be true. I said there was a certain degree of reticence because my father was, I think, ashamed in some way of being a deserter. Whereas I thought it was fantastic. No soldiers, no war. So I'm all for it. So here's the story. I think in 43, my parents were at a dance in Sheerness, services dance, and they met and they fell in love and they left the war. And then they had to undertake the perilous journey from Sheerness over to Ireland. It's not that easy, you know, because of all the activity in the Irish Sea and the vigilance too. Going back a generation, I think epiphanous grandfather, whose name I carry, but not my grandfather by blood, is John Scully. John Scully left the army in 1916 to join the uprising and of course was apprehended and taken to Chatham where he was sentenced to be hung, shot. So he wasn't having any of that, so he hung himself in 1916. And then my father was the issue of a later grieving romance with John Scully's friend. And the example of John Scully has inhabited me very strongly. The interesting thing about Chatham Jail is that when my father went to prison after we returned, he went to Chatham Jail. I thought that was pretty weird. Yeah. And I personally have not been to Chatham Jail. I've skipped it. Not yet, but anything's possible. Anyway, to return, they make the journey and they managed, without getting apprehended, to get over to Ireland, which was, of course, as we all know, neutral, but tacitly in favor of Germany. And they get there, which itself is an odyssey. They arrive in Dublin, in Inchicore, and they're on the street. And that's when the travelers befriended them, and they stayed with them on that campsite there. From what I know, about 6 months. And then it became time to get me birth certificate so that my mother knew that I wouldn't get one if we stayed with the travellers. So Dillon's at number 7 gave us the cellar room, 6 feet by 7 feet. And we stayed there for 6 months. And on my birth certificate, it says, traveller. Nice, huh? I mean, I can show it to you anytime you want to see it. I might have a copy of it in there.
Maybe we can lay some claim to you now that it's on your birth cert that you're traveling.
It's as clear as day in black and white on my birth certificate.
Yeah.
It says, profession of father, traveler.
Yeah. Fantastic.
There it is. So we stayed down in the cellar for 6 months, and then, you know, you can't stay in somebody's house forever. Yeah. So then we went back with the travelers again for about 6 months, I think. So in other words, the travelers were very hospitable to us, and I consider myself to be one of them. I'm very bonded. Yeah. And I've even made a painting called Traveler. I mean, these things are very deep, you know. I mean, we were on the run. I mean, I was born into criminality. It's quite a start, isn't it?
It is.
And I know at one point we had a room on O'Connell Street, but those are the only three places that we had in the 4 years that I was in Dublin. So the way I see it is this, told to be my mother, you know, was less reticent than my father. We went, they were on the street, then travellers took them in. Then we were at 7 Tramway Terrace, and then back with the travellers for another 6 months. That must have been really fun, though, I have to say. And then, I think O'Connell Street, over to England. Under the radar, so my brother would be born in England, whose name was going to be Seamus, but was changed to Anthony. Because they've obviously figured out that if they had a son born in England, they could bring the other one in. But if both sons were born in Dublin, with the ensuing hostility between Ireland and England after the war, we'd never have got back to England. You know that the Irish government sent a letter of regret to the German High Command.
That's right. Yeah.
Down in Malaga. And the English newspapers would say, outrage, you know. But frankly speaking, without wishing to be punishing or vengeful, you know, the English didn't need to do too much with Ireland, because it was a perfectly nice plantation right next door, just like those ones down in Mississippi. But there it was, conveniently located. Yeah. Next door. So when we crossed, that's when my memory kicks in. And I used to have a dream of this man walking in front of me. And I kept having this dream all the time. And it was foggy. And then my mother said, yes, that's the crossing. The ship lost its radio, and all the crew were walking up and down with poles and flashlights, because the whole sea was full up with mines, and it was a very hazardous situation. So then I made this painting called Precious, and then I made another one called Precious, which is a little painting inside a big one. And the little painting, of course, was me. So I've always had this very instinctive relationship with Inchi Corps, you know. And I think sometimes the people are rather bemused by me, you know, because here's this guy with the Marks and Spencer's accent walking around in Inchi Corps and saying, hey, how you doing? And they say, oh, all right, thanks. So that's kind of what I know. My father was a rather conflicted fellow, because first of all, he had six sisters and he was illegitimate. So we carried the name Scully, which I'm extraordinarily proud of, and I identify tremendously with John Scully, and I am made of this material.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not messing around, and I'm not being pushed around in New York. And you know, I use the metaphor a lot. You know, if I feel, you know, I'm being manipulated, because I live in a world of persuasion, you know? I'm an artist who's very successful. So people are always trying to massage me into positions that are not perhaps quite what ethical or good for my work or whatever. And I live in this world, a world of many grays. And then my favorite metaphor, which I use all the time, is, well, you know what? If you don't like this, and I don't like this, I just get on my little caravan and I tap my donkey and off we go. I use it all the time. So if it's not working for you, if this is not what you want, it's fine. No hard feelings. And then I finish it up by saying, and it has no rear view mirror.
Can I just say something else? It's just extraordinary that what you said about persuasion, and then you are an extremely successful artist, an extremely successful in that sense. What I find, because I grew up in the state, I grew up in, bred, born and reared on the ditchback, as we would say among travellers. But I know so many successful artists and others who would have connections to traveller and to tinker background, and have done so much to disconnect themselves from it. They've done so much to conceal that because of the fear that connection, and that either whether it's a bloodline or it's family line or whatever, would somehow hinder their career opportunities and their status. But you've never done that. You know, you've never hidden the fact that your parents spent so long or such a period of time with a group of people, as I keep saying, the outsiders of the outsiders, the first thirders in this state when it was formed in 22. And I just find that extraordinary. And just even the story you're saying there about your donkey and your cart or whatever, and if you don't like it, well then lump it, I'm off, and I'm not going to look in the rearview mirror. I mean,
but I always say it like, it's not even that I have to make an effort. The metaphor is so beautiful because all I have to do is tap my little donkey. I only have to make this movement, look, just this. I don't have to pack bags, I don't have to get on a plane, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have to go to an airport. In the metaphor, I'm talking of the metaphor, because obviously I don't have a caravan, but in my head, I do.
Yeah.
So your beginnings are really powerful, you know, it's like, in America, people, you know, would be taken by the American Indians, and the white Europeans could never get them back, because it was in fact a more attractive society, because there is something really very beautiful about it, you know. And I talk about this with my son Oshin, you know. And I say, you know, the people who just wanted to live free like people used to live before taxes, before, you know, sales tax, before passports, before censuses, the way the world was free. And the people that carried on living like that eventually got marginalized because there are all these fences everywhere, and people want to say, this is my land,
yeah,
even though everything's borrowed. including your body. We don't own anything. All we own is our spirit. That's the only thing we own. The rest is borrowed.
What I'm struck by, just going back to your birth cert, you said again about on your birth cert traveller. I've just often, did you ever ask your parents why they allowed that to be put on it, or did they just see it as part and parcel? Or did, you know?
Well, that's what they were. At the time,
yeah.
They were travellers. So there it is. And I show it to people, and it has given me a sort of, I would say it's given me a traveling disease. You know? Because I don't identify myself very, very solidly. You know, people say, how many studios have you got? And I just say, I've got one Berlin, Munich, London, New York. I've got two in, that's five. And they say, five? Why have you got five studios? And I always say, because I'm a traveler. I don't want to stay in one place. I mean, it does give you this problem, I think. Depends how you.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't see it as a problem whatsoever, Sean. I see it as a very much it's not a problem.
I just happened to have it in my bag, but are some photographs that our friend Alan McWeeny lived with travellers in Ballyfermot the 1960s. And he said when he went there, he noticed that there were people who weren't originally travellers but were living homeless in Dublin and taken in by the travellers just up the road in Ballyfermot.
Well, that's what happened to us.
Yeah.
That's the same story. Because people who are marginalised are kind.
Yeah.
And they understand hospitality because they understand the lack of it. So they give it. I think it was a very natural thing, you know. My father, I remember, had a knife. And he had knife fights on the street. And I suspect, and it's not narrated to me, but my deduction is that, you know, the travellers would give them haven. Because if you're on the street, two of you, a man and a woman, just up against a fence, you're in a very vulnerable position.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever seen Ironweed, for example, you know, or you see people on the Bowery in New York, they get robbed all the time.
Yeah.
And the travellers, you know, brought them in, particularly knowing that my mother was pregnant. My mother would walk across a field where the nuns were.
Golden Bridge.
Yeah, that one. And they would feed her, which produced me, of course. I like to say sometimes Irish people come in two sizes, big and little, and not much in between, you know, like Tyson Fury.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And I weighed 1 pound when he was born. I think I weighed 11. Ouch.
The nuns fed your mother well.
Yeah, they did.
And that was in this house, Golden Bridge, and this was the nuns' chapel.
Yeah, and this is where I was baptised.
And I heard they used to have penny dinners in there.
That makes sense.
They had penny dinners.
The only thing is that they didn't have a penny. So they wouldn't have been having the penny dinners.
There used to be travellers up in D.C.'s in his car. Now where the top of our road, where the school is.
Yeah.
Just in there where the mace or the apartments are now. But there was travellers in there,
Okay.
Opposite.
Okay.
Tramway Terrace.
Dance.
That's the one. because we moved, we moved 100 meters.
That's, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That must be the one I'm talking about.
And they showed me the room where we stayed.
Yeah.
And I could hardly believe that you'd get three people in there.
But I wonder, Paddy, did you have any questions for Sean, seeing as you've been, you know his work quite well, you've been a critic of his work.
And since you're going to be in 25 years the director of RTE, you might as well start now.
I just have one question. What got you into like painting and like art and sculpting?
Well, a huge figure for me in my life was my grandmother, who made the trip from Clonmel. She was heroic, really, because she had lost her husband, you know, John, hung himself. And she was left with a little baby boy and six sisters, one more overbearing than the other. And they went to Dublin, then they went to London. And we lived in the big house after the old Kent Road, where we just lived in these various slums for a while. So she rented this big house for 5 shillings a week from an Irish butcher on the Holloway Road. And of course, all the family moved in, and it was extremely colourful. And she had that fake church paper, you know what I mean? That wax paper, you put it on windows, and it grandizes your house. And I always saw the light coming through the paper, like it does in the Rouen Cathedral. And these things gave me a very strong sense of beauty. Plus, she was a very humble and religious woman. So I had a strong religious underpinning, which of course I'm too cavalier to observe. But I like to think of myself as the wild Irish rover. And however, I have a very strong inner core, of spiritual inner core, that was put there during these couple of years that we lived in Highbury. We lived there 3 years. And my mother was a vaudeville singer who used to sing Unchained Melody at vaudeville. And here's a nice little tinker story for you, which you'll identify with. She could sing unbelievable good. She didn't have your confidence. You know, she was a bit delicate. And she used to sing this song, Unchained Melody, which of course the Righteous Brothers made a smash hit out of. And when we lived in this place in Highbury, we would identify talent contests around the coast. Because after the war, everybody needed cheering up, and they had talent contests. So we would go and stay in this place, and we'd stay in a little rubbish hotel. And she'd go in the talent contest, she would always win. Always. And that paid for the hotel. Isn't that nice? And we didn't pay for the hotel at the beginning because we didn't have any money. We just knew that she was going to win. And she won every time. It was like a magic trick. She had a red taffeta dress. She'd come on and she'd sing Unchained Melody, and everybody would start crying, and she would win. Then we'd pay the hotel. Lovely. And take the train back. And that's really, that's like a, I see that as a kind of tinker story, because it's based on hope, isn't it? Of, yeah. Of faith, belief in yourself.
In yourself,
well. In yourself, yeah. And that's kind of the way I grew up. So the influence of this early start in Dublin was very strong in me. And it is very strong in me, my sense of independence. And I think when you, you know, when you don't have anything under you, it makes you fearless. And that set me up in New York. Question: what made you get interested in art? All that. Plus the Stations of the Cross paintings in this little church that was a shed. Still there, it's a community shed. Because, yeah. You know, we didn't have a proper church. And they had these paintings around Station of the Cross, and I remember them being red, black, and kind of creamy color, which is what my paintings are very much based on. And we went back for my my cousin's funeral, because I have two cousins, Anna and Leslie, and Anna was just a nutcase, and she died very young. And I asked the priest, who was an Irish guy, where are those paintings? And he said, oh, yeah, I'm really sorry about those paintings, you know, they weren't any good. So we just threw them away. And it sort of broke my heart, because I wanted them. Yeah. Those really influenced me. It's not that they were any good, but they were art, and they told a story, and it affected me. So they were visual. And I think the fact that they were about Jesus affected my sense of the spiritual in my work. But, you know, I didn't have any precedent. Nobody in my family ever went to university. I'm the first one. So it was the fact that the ambience in which we lived was colourful, and that gave me a sense of beauty. And when you see your mother go on the stage, you know, with the floodlights,
yeah.
And she's wearing this red, kind of pinky red, you know, that taffeta is a bit shiny. Well, she looked like an angel. She looked like a painting, like a singing painting. So that was it. I think that's what it comes from. But it was kind of decided by the time I was 8, you know, like you being the director of RTE.
I am hit by this today, because it's just my own background as a tinker traveller, and I come from a very, very proud about that, and I'm a traveller activist and have been since I was born, but I've been involved and I run a small organisation in Tala, and it's very important to me. It's just something you struck me about when Paddy asked you the question about your influences in terms of art, or how'd you come about it. Your mother, my own mother, she's still alive. She's illiterate, can't read, can't write. But when we were children, we lived in this particular camp, an isolated spot. We had no electricity, no running water,
right.
The usual that would be of its time. But every night she'd tell us tinker stories or traveler stories.
Beautiful.
And I know it's what influenced me to go on to study history and archaeology, yes, and that whole, yes, and the myths and legends.
Right.
But you had a particular story, which was Jack the Cobbler, the widow woman's son from Ireland, killed 365 lives with the one blow. And that's just the name of the story. But the story is the usual story of rags to riches, which is, in a sense, is the story of yourself, Sean.
Yes, my story.
But it's my mother who was my influence, or has, I suppose, nurtured my interest in that whole, storytelling or interested in history and all that. And I just think it's an extraordinary achievement on your part. And I'll just finish with this point, because I think it's extraordinary with the history of the Irish as a people and as a nation. And this is the 100th anniversary of the state this year. Going back to that point I was making about, I know so many people who come who have made successful lives of themselves and achieved so much, and yet they conceal so much about their origin and where they come from. And I just think it's an extraordinary, and I have to say, Susan, and I have to say, Sean, I will be using this as the biggest piece of propaganda tool I can to promote my people's identity and background and their right to exist in 21st century Ireland as well, because I'll be using the name of Sean Scully in every piece of work I'm involved in or every interview I'm doing in the coming year. So I do hope that it ain't going to cause you any offence.
Not in the least. When I opened my exhibition in Philadelphia, which is the second greatest collection of modern art in the world, on earth, Philadelphia Museum. It's an absolute citadel. Everybody thanks all the upper echelon. You know, director comes and gives this long speech and then says, I would like to thank, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Rich Bags for all their support, etc., etc. And then the curator says, we would like to acknowledge the support of so and so and so and so. On the door of the museum, there's a guy called Nelson. He's a black guy. He's been there all his life. And he's the one who opens the door for every single person. He's the face of the museum. So after all the people acknowledged, you know, the high and mighty, I acknowledged Nelson. It was fantastic.
Beautiful.
And everybody went wild, right? Yeah. They were all clapping and, you know,
yeah.
And then Nelson has been standing there at this, you know, damn door for 40 years. Somebody like me, you know, Nelson and I do have the very loving kind of relationship. You know, somebody like me acknowledges him and all the other people that do all the work that, you know, make it all possible. And when I left, you know, he was kissing me. I mean, it was beautiful. Yeah. So I'm very much with the people. Another thing is this. This is consistent with the project I set myself. And I know that I'm dealing with high art, you know, I'm not dealing with popular art. I'm not making cartoons. I wanted to give abstract painting back to the people. And that is why I set myself the task to make abstract painting less rarefied and more subject-based, more metaphorical-based, It's very consistent with thanking Nelson. It's all the same thing with me. I want you to bring it down off of its pedestal. You know the joke about the artist in the ivory tower? Well, I didn't want this. And I don't want to make art. I don't want to be a prince who makes art for princes. I wanted to popularize, if it's possible, abstract painting. Easier said than done. But that was my project, which is extremely consistent with me identifying myself as a person from here and always being connected to the street, you know.
Absolutely.
So even in the content of my work, this story is seamless. There's no break.